$1,000 in Bitcoin to this address, please. And what do you expect a mother to do in that situation?
They'll be like, I don't know how to use Bitcoin.
Have you seen the, what a lot of people experience with phones, which is like, hey, I bought a brand new phone. I don't own a cat, but I was talking to someone at the coffee shop about their cat, and now all I get is cat ads on my phone. Have you experienced that?
Very similar. So experience we had that we had a mom and a little boy come around. The little boy's name was Luigi, and we hadn't touched any phones during the whole time he was there. The end of the day, look at the phone, and I'm getting ads from eBay about Mario and Luigi figures. And I'm like, okay, these guys really are listening in.
How? I don't understand. Like, how are people not upset about this? Because by now, I think it's common knowledge.
I think people aren't upset because they feel powerless. I just think, because we're always switching off these things, but they just turn themselves on again, and it's just annoying.
it's all, to me, I kind of think of it like crack, because it's like people who smoke crack, they're well aware of the dangers. They know what happens to people who don't stop smoking crack. But crack is so damn amazing, let's just be honest, that they're like, screw it, I don't care about the side effects. That's the thing. Because listen, we could easily just go back to a flip phone, but smartphones are just so awesome.
Yeah. Well, there is that. There's a jazz critic called Ted Joya, and he calls it the dopamine. He calls all these companies like Facebook and Google and the dopamine cartel. And they just get you hooked. And it's all about distracting you. But ultimately, that's not a good end for anyone.
Do you think that these people at the big tech companies sleep well at night?
I think some do. I think some are quite psychopathic. I think someone like Mark Zuckerberg, I think he probably sleeps quite well. But I think Elon Musk is a more conflicted and complex figure than most of them, because he's always warning of the dangers of stuff. And he's clearly conflicted about the whole thing. And yet he is part of it. So he probably doesn't. I don't think he sleeps anyway. I think he's always working, so he doesn't have the issue of not sleeping well at night.
Yeah, he's never slept well because he sleeps on the floor of like his car factories. But yeah, that's a good point. I really do believe people like Mark Zuckerberg, for example, they're smart enough and they're aware enough that they know exactly what they're doing.
They
absolutely do. And me, I guess I would consider myself a normal guy. Like, if I see people hurting, I hurt. I'm guessing that this thing just doesn't exist in people like Mark Zuckerberg.
Or that it's so deeply suppressed. Because it was when there was some research that came out that proved that Instagram was making young girls suicidal and all this horrible stuff. And at the same time this research came out, they were pushing to make the age of access to Instagram younger in the congressional hearings or whatever it was. I don't know how your system of government works. And I thought, how could you be doing those two things at the same time? What about reflection? Wouldn't you be kind of going, we need to do something to keep our business alive, but do so in a way that doesn't cause young girls to ruin their lives.
Okay, John. I'm gonna teleport into Mark Zuckerberg real quick, and I'm gonna set you straight. Okay. Listen, John. Listen. Look, I understand everything you're saying is true, but don't tell anyone or I'll fucking kill you. First of all, we use these business tactics to make money. The whole goal is money. And guess what we do with that money? I have donated tens of millions of dollars to charities. I fed thousands and thousands of kids who were hungry. I've taken people off the streets. And that would have never happened unless I had literally billions of dollars.
I'm not convinced.
Listen, John, if you keep talking that way, I will have you whacked, you mother sucker.
Well, I am banned from Facebook advertising, so.
Isn't everybody?
I don't even know why.
I don't either. They just banned me. It's like, hey, it's Tuesday, you're banned.
Yeah, and then you had, do you want to appeal? Yes. Your appeal was rejected. There's no, they don't tell you why. They don't tell you what you did wrong. They don't tell you how to make amends. You just, that's it.
Exactly. That's how you know people like Facebook are the pretty girl in the room, because they can be choosy. If you ever like tried to advertise on Reddit, they're like, here's our rules. And there's like one rule. It's like, do not show people getting their head chopped off. Anything else goes. Go for it. But Facebook is like, they're the pretty girl in the room. They're like, ooh, you know, you can buy me a drink, but you better like talk smooth to me first. And oh, I don't like you just because, you know, I just got the ick because you have a blue shirt on. And so it's like, huh, I can't wait until the day where Facebook gets a little bit humbled and they have to loosen up and they send you that email, John, because you know it's coming. It's going to say, hey, I know your advertising account was banned, but we reviewed it and now you're active. And not only are you active, here's a free $10 credit. They're going to come kissing your toes.
The thing is with all of these things, they've stolen people's data. And so they've got really, really good data. They've got the best data of anyone. And they can say, like, in this postcode, we know all the people that are really interested in this particular podcast. They're also really interested in this particular food, and they go to the shops on Thursday afternoon and they buy this particular, and they pull all those things together, and then they've got this amazing data set. And
I don't think a lot of people know what you're describing, and what you're saying is essentially you can go on Facebook and you can say, hey, I want to advertise my thing to people in the south of London who are into Harry Potter, also into Nike shoes, and also are like between the ages of 34 and 37. That's scary.
Yeah. And that's why you get these really, really specific targeted ads that you're like, that's a bit freaky.
I know. I didn't even think that it was that possible. In fact, I did a podcast with a guy who worked in digital marketing, and we had our big 2016 election where Trump won, and his whole thesis was that Trump won because he used micro-targeted ads, this exact tactic that we're talking about. So what Trump would do is, or his campaign, is he would say, hey, listen, I have an ad about like people in the military and how they're just not treated right and they need to be paid more. And you know what? So I'm going to go into Facebook and I'm going to select just people who served in the military in the past 2 years, and I'm going to show them that ad. And then I'm going to have another one for like teachers saying, hey, you know what, teachers, you've been set. And I'm only going to show that ad to the teachers. So his whole thesis, and he was a really smart guy. His whole thesis was that he utilized this to where every person who's seen that ad, it felt like Trump was talking directly to them. Mm. It's crazy.
Obama was the one that started it, actually. He did clever targeting ads. And I think by the time Obama's term was over, it had just got so much more sophisticated. And Trump was probably the smartest to utilize it.
Do you think, like, so,
or one of his people, he probably just employed a smart person that knows about that.
Oh, definitely. Do you think Trump was in like the Facebook ads manager?
No.
How do I do this?
He wouldn't even know what any of those things are.
Yeah.
And neither would anyone of his generation. He's like, it's not like.
Exactly. So is the challenge to, because I think, like you said, the study came out, you know, Instagram is really hurting young girls. You know, it, breaking news, water is wet. We've known this for a long time.
Mm.
Is the challenge that we need to make something that is better than these social media feeds, like by far, that is also healthy? Like, how do you tackle this? Because like I said, it's trying to get someone off of crack.
Yeah. So you cannot compete with, so everything has to fit with human nature. We are wired in a particular way. So you can't build a product that's going to be, I don't know, not working with the grain of human nature. It doesn't matter how you think the world is. You can't will it to be a way it's not. That's where I think I tend to have more libertarian leanings as a person, but I think there is some level of some level of incentive that the state can give. And I think banning social media use for people younger is good. So I totally agree with Jonathan Haidt's. I don't know if you've come across Jonathan Haidt. He's a social psychologist who's just written a book, and he's got like 5 recommendations on that the government should put forward for social media. It's quite bipartisan, which is quite good. And they're things like you shouldn't have social media before you're in secondary school. You shouldn't have, I can't remember what they all were now, but they seem quite sensible things. So I think a mixture of legislation. But then I think people do feel a bit sick after a while. If you're doom scrolling, you go, I have wasted my time, and you feel a bit, it does feel sickening. It doesn't give you anything, and you're like, I've wasted my time. And so I think they're quite a short shelf life. Like, it wasn't, I deleted all the apps off my phone, all these things a long time ago. I mean, I put them all back on again to promote my project, but and they're coming off as soon as that's over. But I just deleted them all because I realized it just didn't do any good. But I have Substack, and I enjoy Substack, and its incentive structure is slightly different. And I don't feel sick if I've spent a long time on Substack like I do if I'm on the other one. So maybe the Substack kind of business model where it's the users can make money. Their business model is basically subscription based. So it incentivizes better quality content, and rather than it all be algorithmically kind of generated stuff.
Isn't that exactly what OnlyFans is? It's like, hey, I can start my own little business. And by the way, you don't have to show your feet and your butthole on OnlyFans. You can just say, hey, like, for example, some famous person can start at OnlyFans and say, hey, look, take a peek behind the curtain of my life. You want to see what I eat for breakfast and stuff like this. But just like it seems like everything else, we take it to the extremes. And now OnlyFans is just, it's straight up porn site.
Yeah, so OnlyFans was for anything. I remember a friend was talking about tutoring on it. And I'm like, you can't do that now. And that is the thing of human nature is such that we're a mixture of being good and our worst instincts both exist simultaneously in a person. And that is the reality we live in. So OnlyFans made a decision to allow it to become like it did, and eventually porn takes over. But they could have made a decision not to do that. I think Pinterest made some interesting decisions to limit the kind of content they did, which probably made them less profitable. But remember the CEO saying, no, I do have some red lines. And yeah, so I guess it's you can obviously make a lot of money if you did go a kind of subscription route and it become porn. But if you go down a subscription route and actually you're incentivizing people to do stuff that's going to be good for people, then yeah, that's going to be more positive.
I know. Unfortunately, it seems like everything that we look at, such as like these doom scrolling feeds, you know, the app spying on you. It's like if you really, you unveil the curtain and then you unveil the curtain and you keep going deeper and deeper and deeper. it seems like all of these things, including stuff like I was talking about, like actual drugs, things like motivations behind, like, why are people depressed, right? Suicide, stuff like this. Why are people fighting over the best shoes? And why are people going out and buy these iPhones? It seems like the root of it all of those things, is people's desire for money at all costs. And it's okay to want money. I want money. But it's the at all cost thing. It's, hey, Mark Zuckerberg, and we're just picking on Mark today. You know what, Mark? You are in the target. Please don't kill me. So, like, if I'm Mark Zuckerberg, I cannot comprehend, and maybe it's because I'm not rich, I can't comprehend someone saying, hey, I have $3 billion in the bank, but you know what? I'm going to fuck over young teenage girls to get to $10 billion. I can't understand that.
Well, I guess it's the thing that money's in a way is neutral. So it's the line in the Bible where it talks about the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And it's the love of money is the problem. So, you know, if you happen to make a billion legitimately and it's all above board, that's fine. And you can then give it away. It's less, it doesn't hold you. But if you are controlled by it, then you have to have more and more and more. And it's like, was it Rockefeller was asked, how much money do you need? And he said, just a little bit more. And it's that kind of that thing that ends up controlling. It becomes the God, I guess. And you serve that at all. And you sacrifice everything to it. And it's pretty grim.
Can you sympathize with that? Like, have you ever felt that? Or have you ever maybe like been around somebody who you can tell has this feeling?
I have had some people that we've worked for over the years that have been a bit like that. I remember, I'm trying to make sure I don't say anything that would incriminate a specific person. So we did something for someone that was working for a well-known organization, and they were trying to withhold money that we'd worked for. And they were all like, oh, it's really, really low budget. And one of my colleagues was so fed up with not having the money, went to the person's house. And they had this very luxurious house. And eventually we got paid via a Coutts account. And I don't know if a Coutts account means anything to you.
No.
But it's you can't bank with Coutts unless you were ridiculously rich. And so it showed that this person was incredibly rich. They lived in a big house, and their wealth clearly came from treating people lower down the food chain really badly. But I think, it's not about how wealthy someone is, because you can have poor people that are so driven by money, like that becomes their thing. But most of the people I tried, or I kind of like attracts like. I work in creative work. So people who work in creative industries, they tend to be driven because they want to make beautiful or interesting things. And that becomes they'll probably step on people to do that, but that's their end goal rather than the money.
I've always wondered with that. I've thought about it. I wonder the person was either born with it or they became it. I don't know if someone was born with just like this, fuck everybody, I will do whatever, I will cut whatever throat to get the dollar. Or is it something that whenever people become very wealthy, maybe they become addicted? Because it does seem like if you've ever followed a person, maybe a small YouTuber, a small artist or something like that, or even a small actor, podcaster, it seems like whenever they get big and rich, they get weird. Do you notice that?
It does happen to a lot of people, particularly when they're young. So it's interesting that if someone kind of makes it when they are much older in life, it doesn't seem to have as bad effect. I think if you've got a lot of people around you constantly telling you you're amazing, you might start to believe them. And money has the effect of making people think that they are better than other people. Because if they can make $10,000 in 10 minutes and you've got someone else who spends a whole year scrubbing floors until their hands are bleeding, that it's very easy for that person who makes it in a few minutes to think of themselves as better than that person that was scrubbing the floors until their hands were bleeding. But actually, the person who's scrubbing their floors has probably done more to help humanity half the time.
Yes.
Stopping diseases spreading, you know?
Oh, yeah, totally. So, John, do you think if I gave you $1 billion cash after taxes, everything right now, how do you think you would be different as a person 1 year from now?
I don't think it would particularly change me because I don't think I'd hang on to the money. So a lot of it would just go into making projects. So there'd be like all the different things I want to make, they would just get made. But I would, I would be wanting to support different people's projects. I'd want to help people with it. So it wouldn't be, I don't think I'd hang on to it.
But what if, so you're a billionaire though, right? So everything changes. So let's say you make your projects and you go to like a white tie dinner, like a suit and tie dinner with some of the most powerful people around the world, celebrities, rich politicians and stuff like that. And you say, I have never, ever been around something like that. The women are beautiful. And guess what? Now they think you are the most sexy guy in the room for some odd reason. And they are just like giving you the cocktails. They're like touching you on the shoulder. And this is attention you never got. You don't think that could like have an effect on you at all?
I think it would scare the living daylights out of me. I think I'd get out of that place quick. Maybe if I was a bit younger, I might get drawn in. But now I've lived enough life that I'd just be terrified. I'd be like, I don't want... Because these people, they don't like you. I think one of the things that keeps you grounded is your family, your friends. I think my wife would just totally take the mickey out of me if I got drawn into that kind of world. I've got enough friends that would just be ridiculing me. My family WhatsApp group would just be just panning me. I just don't think I can get away with it.
Well, no, wouldn't they be like, hey, John, can you give me like $100? Isn't that what they want to do?
No, they'd just be laughing at me because I'd become everything I don't want to be.
Oh, man, that is awesome. I think you're making a great point. Since you've been around, you've seen, you know, some stuff going down. It's like you're a lot more mature now. And so you can kind of like spot this stuff. It's like, hey, you know what? I seen this exact same pretty girl in the coffee shop yesterday. And she looked at me and said, ew. And now all of a sudden, she wants to come home with me. And I think like you can see past that. It's like, oh, okay, what changed? The money. So I got to get the fuck out of here.
And also, I'm married, so. I just don't. Double reason not to go down that route.
How long have you been married?
6 years. 6 years and a month.
What's the key to a happy marriage?
I think having the same kind of worldview in a way. So if you're pushing in the same direction broadly in life, then it makes things a lot easier. I'd probably... I'm not very good at it, but I think being self-sacrificial is a good key. We're both very laid back. So, I think we have an easier time of it than many. But then who knows what's around the corner? But
yeah, that's yeah. Laid back is always so good, especially in like women, in my opinion, because the worst quality that a woman can have is if she nags me. And a nagger, like, because honestly, I respect naggers because they are so skilled. Like, you can do everything right. You can check all the boxes, right? But they'll still find something to get you for. It's like, why'd you put the toilet paper that way? I told you. Oh my gosh. You always put the toilet paper that way. Do you even love me? I hate naggers. So a laid back woman, I think, is just, it's a beautiful thing. And I'm so happy you found her. How'd y'all meet?
We were at so I knew her boss a little bit, but we were at a conference in Poland and we were arguing about everything and anything. We love arguing, by the way. We argue for sport, and if we'll also flip opinions just to, so we'll argue one position, then we'll argue the opposite. So we enjoyed arguing, and that kind of continued when we got back to London. So we'll just, yeah.
Is London the best city on the world on Earth?
Well, I've not been to every city on Earth, so taking that into consideration, I think it's the most exciting city. It's not the most beautiful, although it is got some really beautiful parts. It's always very alive. There's always something happening, and it is suffering a bit because it's got so expensive, and once things get too expensive, a lot of kind of crazy creative startup things don't happen as frequently because people can't risk as much. And I feel London is almost a victim of its own success there. But there's such a mix, and it's such a global place. And so you can walk down the street and you could see, I don't know, hundreds of different nationalities, and you can meet people from all over the place and ask them, oh, what's it really like? And what's your opinion on this? And you can really hear some, as long as people trust you, you'll hear such a range of opinions on so many topics. And I find that really exciting. And so London has that to offer. I mean, I'm just thinking of other cities. What other cities have I really enjoyed when I visited?
Yeah, what's number two?
I really enjoyed Bogota in Colombia, partly because you've got all the mountains. You've got the Andes along the side, and then you've got these beautiful kind of Baroque and buildings, and it's people are very friendly. I enjoyed Manaus in Brazil, partly because it's so bizarre. You've got a beautiful opera house in the middle of a jungle, and that's quite hard to get your head around. I can't imagine living there, but it's quite fun. But yeah, in terms of an exciting city to live in, I don't know. I really don't know.
Have you ever been to New York City?
I haven't. It's the city in the States that would most attract me. I've been to LA twice, and the people are great. I like the people. I like the attitude, and I like the can-do feel. I love all of that. But as a city, it's pretty ugly. And it's a car park. The weather's nice, but it's just this big car park, and it's a pity, really. I think I'd prefer New York to LA, even though I've not been to New York. So I feel like New York would be more like London. There'd be a bit more energy. And I hear that New Yorkers are straight to the point and a little bit rude, and I probably would enjoy that.
Why would you enjoy that? You like being rude?
It's not that I like being rude, but I like people being straight. So I don't like people who talk around and... Yeah. The kind of fakeness that you get in a lot of places, I like. And if New Yorkers are really straight to the point, like their reputation, then I think I'd probably enjoy that.
Yeah, I've been in, and I think New York is probably my favorite city. I would love to go to London, but I think that my impression is, yes, it does have a lot of energy, and everyone is just busy. Everyone is busy, and
Yeah.
so they don't have the time to be like to like stand behind you and be like, "Oh, excuse me, sir, could you please move out the way?" Like they'll just kind of like nudge you and, "Hey, if you're not in line at Starbucks, then get the fuck out of here," right?
Yeah.
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 What does it feel like to have the best accent in the entire world?
I don't think I do. You see, I think the Irish
Ooh,
or the
that's a good
Jamaicans. So Irish or maybe the Scots. My ancestry is Scottish, but sadly, you don't get an accent via ancestry. My wife's ancestry is Jamaican, but she's got a London accent. So yeah, I think it's the Irish or the Jamaicans have it, I have to say.
Okay, yeah, you're making great points here. This is actually great because Jamaicans, you could hear them talk about anything and it sounds cool. But the European London type of accent, this sophisticated accent, what I've noticed is that people will put this accent into movies, even though it kind of there's no reason it's there, because it like conveys a certain level of sophistication. And I think Dune is an example of that. They have some characters in there who have this very sophisticated accent, like you. They sound very smart, even though the book never mentions that they're from that part of the world.
We often, I mean, the thing with the English accents is they're often denoting class. So there is a meaning that they often have. So you can go, okay, this person is from this background or that background just from hearing their accent. And which is a bit of a curse in many ways, because people get pigeonholed by the way they sound, and I don't think that's good because you're not judging someone on who they really are. And I think traditionally in Hollywood films, you've got a bad guy. What accent do you want to give them? Do you want to give them an accent of one of the countries you're currently in conflict with? That could be potentially an issue. Or do you want to make them British and therefore Brits don't mind being bad guys? It kind of it carries history with it. I don't know. It tends to be the bad guys that we play.
That is true. I just think, at least here in the States, whenever someone hears you talk, they think, wow, sophisticated, a suit, probably drinks wine, smokes cigars, has his life together. They hear me talk, which I have like a southern country accent, right? They're like, oh, wow, he probably sleeps with his sister.
That's a prejudice, though, that we would have inherited from your films.
You're right.
You gave us that prejudice. But what do you think of Daniel Craig's? I don't know if you've seen Daniel Craig in the Glass. Oh, what's it called? It's a murder mystery type thing.
I
He
don't think
plays
I
a
have.
southern. He does a southern accent, and to me it sounds incredible, but it's because it's not my accent. I don't know.
Yeah, I have not watched that. I'll definitely check it out.
I'm just Googling its name quickly. Glass Onion.
Glass. No, I haven't. Let me. And Daniel Craig did that?
Yeah, I mean, to me, his accent sounded totally. If I didn't know who he was, I would have thought he was native, but maybe to locals, they're just like, no.
Well, I think you're right. There is some, at least we're talking about people from southern part of America. There is like different like flavors, right? Just like I'm sure there's even different accents in London or whatever, but
Yeah, you can tell there's so many different accents. Yeah.
yeah. So I think like my favorite southern accent is like the classic cowboy. The American cowboy who rides a horse and lassos cows. I love that. They got that twang. And man, I'll tell you what, we're just going to be eating tonight. But I am from, I am like Cajun, right? I'm from Southern Louisiana. It's like French roots. And so I have like the worst sounding accent. Like Southern Louisiana is like a weird type of area where it's like kind of isolated. Like that accent doesn't really exist anywhere else. Hmm. And so I think it is very off-putting. I think if whenever you come to the States, do people treat you good?
Yeah. So I've been three times. I've been to LA twice, and then I went to Florida for 24 hours because I was flying to Bogota, so, and it was the way to do a really cheap flight. And people thought I was much more intelligent than I was. And what was very interesting was when I went to Florida, I met this homeless guy and got chatting with him, and I had a horrible breakfast that I ended up giving the whole breakfast to him because I really didn't like it, and got him a bottle of water. And I think because of my accent, he felt that he could talk to me. And he was talking about how he was a black guy, but he was saying how Obama's let us all down and all of that. And I was really, I don't know whether he'd have spoken so freely had I had an American accent. I don't know.
Yeah. Listen, we're obsessed with politics, from the richest of the rich to the homeless people. They're like, I'm homeless because of politicians. I don't know. Is it like that over there? Do y'all, when you go into coffee shops, do you hear everyone talking about politics and elections and stuff?
So we used to have a saying that kind of was true, that it was impolite to talk about politics or religion. And then, but politics has become much more tribal in recent years. And we've imported a number of your culture war stuff that doesn't even map always onto the British landscape. And I'm just like, ugh. Yeah. So I think people talk about politics, but they're also wearied by it a lot here. I just think, and our political parties are less, I don't know, we're not as tribal, I don't think, as, yeah. But you hear, they say, oh, this person is a registered Democrat, or this person is a registered Republican. And I'm like, yeah, we don't really have like registered Tories or registered Labour voters or registered Lib Dems or whatever. And also we have a multi-party, so we're a two-party system, kind of, but we're not really. So the next election, which will be almost certainly won by our left-wing party, the Labour Party, it will be really determined by what happens in the Scottish National Party, because they probably do badly and their votes will go to Labour in Scotland, which will. And then we've got other smaller parties. They take votes from a big party and that can swing the whole thing over. And even with Kennedy, he's not going to have such an impact on the election in the States. And he's probably the most influential third party person you've had for many years. The fact we do have other voices, I think, makes things a little bit less goodies versus baddies or whatever.
Yeah, I hate that shit.
And I really want it to end.
You know how I haven't really sat down and thought about this, but how I think it quote unquote ends. First of all, I think 90% of it is purely online. And I think how it ends is just kind of by doing what we're doing. We just talk to people. I'm not a political person at all. I just opt out. But I find that whenever people, even if they have wildly different views on politics, religion, or anything, they sit down and talk and it's like, oh, wow, we have so much in common. Like, yeah, oh, you hate getting up early and having to go work out? Me too. Like, oh, you want to eat pizza every day and not get fat? Me too. And I just think that if you just talk to people, man, people are awesome. 99% of people are really cool.
But also encouraging people to argue the best argument they possibly can for the other side of the argument, instead of thinking, oh, those people are stupid or whatever, saying, well, what's the best argument you can make for their position, forces you to start thinking. And I think there's also, we might all agree that we want to reduce poverty. And there'll be those on the left say, well, the best way to reduce poverty is to have lots of government programs to create a bigger safety net so that no one ever goes below a certain level. And we'll do lots of government schemes to help pull people up. And then those on the right will be saying, no, we want to end poverty too. And our way is that we want to liberalize the system so that more money can be business, more businesses can grow, they can employ more people, those people can they can have dignity, incentive to work, and they'll do well. And the good faith people on both sides genuinely want to solve the problem of poverty, but they have completely different routes to it. And sometimes you'll get, you're stupid, or you really hate poor people, or you, and it's like, well, actually, if you really listen to the thoughtful people, they all have their reasons, and they might be wrong, but they have their reasons.
Exactly. I've always, and that's such a beautiful point too. And I'm so glad you said that. I think if you just take something simple like taxes, one person wants to raise taxes. Like you said, you say, okay, hey, Stephen, you want to raise taxes? That's cool. Could you make a case on why, like, raising taxes may be a bad thing? And if they say, oh, no, what are you talking about? That's terrible. Then it's like, okay, you're not advocating for something. You're in a cult. You are brainwashed, bro. Like this, you have to, I think, like normal, intelligent people, and we do this every day. We do this in our everyday life. It's like, hey, I want that pizza. Okay, that's my position. I want the pizza. But it's like, I can easily make an argument on why eating that pizza tonight is a bad idea. We do this all the time. But with like taxes or something like that, people are just like, it's this way or the highway. And it's like you said, if you have a strongly held position that matters to you, that matters to you because we're busy. We don't have time to do mental gymnastics all day. If you have one that really matters to you, something that you're advocating for, you should be able to put forth at least a decently compelling argument for the other side. And then you should be able
Absolutely.
to debunk it, right, with your own facts or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's so important. And the other thing I've realized is I've seen more clips from the States of this where they'll list a whole load of policies and that they'll go up to people who are Trump supporters and they'll say, these are the policies that Hillary Clinton had. And they'll go, oh, they're terrible. And then they're like, yeah, they're Trump's policies. Or they'll go up to and they'll go up to Hillary people and they go, here are a whole load of policies. And that Trump's come up with, they're like, oh, they're evil, they're terrible. Yeah, they're Hillary's policies, and they're just so like in the group that the group matters. What the policies are has got no relevance whatsoever to a lot of people, and it's not good. And why and how things get packaged up. So your view on nuclear power should have no relevance to your view on education policy or your view on
Abortion.
abortion. Yeah, they're not related things, but somehow, oh, if your view, if you have this view on abortion, then you're also going to have this view on nuclear energy. Don't make any sense.
I think going back to what we were talking about with the social media thing, I think that these things, social media and politics, kind of they are like hijacking systems in our brain that were put there to help us to survive. Well, now surviving is a whole lot easier for us, right? It thanks to technology and all kinds of other awesome things, medicine, all of this. But with like social media, they're hijacking that dopamine, right? And that dopamine thing helped us to survive. It motivated us to get out, get food, all of this. It's a reward system. And they say, hey, that thing that, you know, that thing that used to fire in your brain whenever you got a beautiful strawberry, well, we're gonna show you naked women and we're gonna fire that thing 10,000 times a day and just fry your shit. And it's kind of like, it really takes a lot, because it's like it's deeply encoded into our DNA. I feel like the political thing is the same. It's like, hey, we used to live in small tribes up to like about 100 people. And all that mattered was our tribe. Everybody else, fuck you. If you want to come over here, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to rape your women and pillage your forts, right? And so now I think like the politicians or, you know, big companies or whatever are really, really good at like just lighting that up, right? I may say to you, hey, John, hey, look, yo, you live in London. These other people, yo, these people actually want to import all of the homeless people to your front door. Are you going to let them do that? And of course, you're going to say, well, no, I'm not. And by the way, fuck those people and everything they stand for, right? And now, and here we are, 2024, right? 2024.
And neither is, and in that particular thing, neither is really trying to have an intellectual solution to immigration, right? They're not really talking about those issues. It's goodies versus baddies, and they'll flip. It doesn't.
It's crazy. So if I made you, I created a brand new position just for you, John, because I really.
Okay, great.
All right, this is your position. We'll call it the John spot. You are the president of the world. You could do anything. If you wanted to kill me, bam, you could do it. You could do anything.
I won't do that. Don't worry.
Thank you very much for sparing me. Mark Zuckerberg, he would definitely kill me, that bastard. How would you tackle this social media issue, the smartphone issue, the algorithmic feeds, the addiction? What would be your step one?
I don't know. I definitely would. I mean, going back to the Jonathan Haidt's, his advice, he spells his name in a weird way. If you Google it, it's got a T somewhere, and that, I don't know. His points of advice, I think, would be the kind of thing I would push for. I'd want to be a benevolent. Take away my own power very quickly, so I wouldn't actually be president of the world, but it would be all my power would disappear, so it doesn't go to my head and I make the world a worse place. I'd be for the TikTok ban.
Yes, worldwide.
Yeah.
But it's tough, because I think what it looks like the path we're going down. So here in the States, we had a crazy mofo, right? He was called the Unabomber. He would mail.
Yeah, bombs. Yeah.
Okay, great. His manifesto is extremely long, but he's a very well-educated man. He has like a PhD in math. But the gist of his entire manifesto and his cause was, if we don't stop technology now, it's only a matter of time before it ruins the whole world. So I am doing my best to stop it by mailing bombs to people who create technology. But it seems like, because like you said, even if you were president of the world, what are you going to do? It's really hard to stop, you know, quote unquote, progress.
Yeah. And I think the problem is, I don't think it's right to be intervening too much in people's liberty.
Yeah.
I think you want to have strict rules for children and be quite liberal in relation to adults, because I think it's really, really important that children are not only protected, but they are, as their brains are evolving, they're not evolving in a really, really destructive way that leads to patterns that go into adulthood. I think once people are adults, you should hope that their formative years they've been trained well enough that they should be given more freedom. I think it was I've forgotten the name of the guy, but he was one of the really, really early translators of the Bible back in before, like in 1300 or something. And I think he was the one that I think came up with government of the people, by the people, for the people, actually. It's like an old, really old English thing. But he was saying, unless people control themselves, then you'll end up with an authoritarian government that will control you. And so the solution is always actually individuals being in control of themselves. But you, I think with all this technology, you can put safeguards and laws to prevent the worst excesses. So I think it's stupid that you can just create an Instagram account with no ID. I think you should have to prove that you are an adult, or maybe not an adult, but you're not 7 years old.
Yeah, and also to prove that you're a real person too, because
that's
important too. Propaganda has existed for as long as we've known, but now you'd be like, hey man, like, what's the last piece of propaganda you've heard about? Like, I don't know. And because they're so fucking good at it now, right? You have the internet, which is the most powerful propaganda tool ever. Social media is like the hammer, right? It's what you use for everything. I am a software engineer. I code for a living. And from a very early age in my coding life or whatever, I realized that it is incredibly easy to create bots, to create fake profiles, and to essentially amplify whatever you want. And I'm a single person here. Now, if I can do that about maybe a single topic, like let's say, hey, I wanted this podcast to blow up. I want it to be so popular. I'm just going to create some bots and they're going to give it a million likes on Instagram or something like that. This is something that I could do. Now, imagine what a country would do. Imagine what China would do. Imagine what the United States would do. India. Imagine what a company would do. If I'm Nike and I'm releasing a brand new shoe, aren't I going to, like, you know, fire up the bot forums to make tweets and posts and stuff that seem like real people who love the shoe? And that's pretty innocuous, but could you imagine something more sinister? Like some of these tribal mentalities that we're seeing and stuff like that. Like, what if this is not an organic creation? What if, and so it's tough too, because as people, whenever I read on social media, I'm a mother and my son died, my heart breaks immediately. But what I should think is this even a real person?
Yeah.
And nobody does that.
Yeah. It's the bots thing is a huge issue. And now you've got AI that can replicate language and images and all of that, you can just, that can be cranked up to the nth degree. And then if you come across a guy called Ryan Holiday,
that sounds very familiar.
He's a kind of online guy. He's pushes stoicism these days, but he wrote a book about his early days of manipulating stuff to get into news stories. He used to work for American Apparel. Wow. And they would do, like, get one poster printed, then he would photograph the poster on the bus, and then he would have fake accounts writing about how this poster's evil and how it's the most, the American Apparel should be shut down. And he'd have all these accounts, and then he would go to the press about this, and the whole thing would just escalate until he had this massive news story. And he would just play the system. And he's very open about what he used to do, which is quite interesting. Now he's a stoic, and he's like decided to go a different route. It's like a religious conversion.
he's doing good things though, because I wish more people would come out. In fact, that's a great idea. Maybe I should create some bots and just be like, you know, just to make a video, make a post or whatever, just to kind of demonstrate that this shit is really not hard. Also, the social media companies are almost incentivized to not hunt out bots, because to them, all a bot is a daily active user. And the more of those they have, the more money they make. So it's kind of, the incentives are warped. Could you tell me about this damn jazz playing cow?
Yes. So he's fighting these algorithms. He's doing it in an unconventional way, using jazz.
Yes! So,
because that is actually the way you fight it. Fight algorithms with jazz.
Yes.
It's the least algorithmic music you could possibly create. So basically, he's a jazz playing cow, and he's leading a resistance movement. So he's in a corner of a place called Pop World, which is the Bohemian Quarter, and it's kind of like Vichy France. They are not part of they're not part of the main city. They've got slightly different rules, and it's where all the misfits and weirdos and artists and musicians and everyone kind of lives in that corner. And so you've got people playing chess, artisan bakers, all the kind of traditional things, things that are inefficient and slow, all happen in this quarter. And they don't use smartphones. They don't even use phones most of the time. It's all too technological for them. They just have them. They're like books and playing music. And so there's these guys. And then you've got Dr. Pop, who's the kind of tech, runs the tech company that controls the city. And he's just expanding and expanding onto their territory. And so you've got a conflict between those two worlds. And these guys can't, Jazz Cal's guys can't unite unless he's there, because they just argue and bicker about everything and anything. And so they need him, and he doesn't want to be their leader, but he has to be. And so that's the setup of the show. And we're on May the 1st going to be trying to raise money for making the pilot, which will be a heist movie with Jazz Cal trying to get his sax back from Dr. Pop's safe. So that's the setup.
How does he, like, what is his, how does he get it back? Because it seems like he's the underdog, and it seems like his favorite thing is jazz, and he's a cow, so he's docile. Like, does he have guns? Like, what's his main approach here?
His approach is not to use guns.
If he now was American, he would, though.
He's played by an American, a really good guy called Nico Neal, who's got the smoothest jazz kind of voice around. So yeah, he's brilliant. They basically fight the game in a different way. So where Dr. Pop's world is digital, his world's acoustic. And so they use real world ways to solve these problems. So without giving too much of a spoiler, there's a way they use music to crack the code. So this pilot is called the Jazz Heist and the Coltrane Code. And so they use the music of John Coltrane to fix the problem. I won't explain how or why that's the case, because I want to leave that for the show, not give too much of a spoiler, but yeah.
This is awesome. And I hear a lot of friends and stuff like, man, you know, there's not a lot of originality on TV, or there's not, like, everything's kind of duplicated. This is the most original plot. In fact, I messaged you and I was like, I read the plot. I said, holy shit. This is the most original, unique plot. I can't even name something that's adjacent to it. Where did the idea come up? Like, what was the birth story?
So I've got a video coming out later this week, actually, on it. But it's basically a group of us used to spend our evenings laughing our heads off, talking about nonsense until late at night, like every night for a long time, just bouncing around silly ideas. And I was flicking through, or I don't know if it's me, it may have been one of the other guys, was flicking through a book that was an encyclopedia of cartoon animals, and they all like get super kind of fighting abilities because they get bitten by something, or they all follow a fairly similar pattern. And we're like, well, what happens if it was a cow rather than like kind of super cool animal? And what happens if it was the ability to play jazz rather than the ability to have lightning come out of your nostrils, or whatever happens with other characters? Like, it was, so that was where it began. And then one of the guys started drawing the characters, and then we woke up the next morning, we're like, well, yeah, we've got to make this. And so yeah, that was its origin.
So just a couple friends palling around, just joking around, and then next thing you know, guys like, yeah, let me sketch this out. And it's like, let's do it.
Yeah,
that is brilliant. So could you, as much as you can, we watch our favorite animated series, such as like Rick and Morty or something like that, and we just kind of see it's like, oh, this is entertaining. But how do you go about making an animated series? Like, what is the first step and how do you bring it to life?
So you're talking about the technical thing of the making of it or the process of getting it? So yeah, the technical thing of making it is script, getting the script completely ready. And then from script, we would storyboard it. So quite detailed storyboards. Often people talk about storyboards. The word has come to mean lots of things these days. We're talking about detailed things, so shot by shot by shot, and working out what each the overview of the story. And then some of that would be going back to script and saying, okay, we don't need that line, we don't need that bit. And from this, when we've got a storyboard that's working or we feel is working in really, really draft form, we'll then record voices and get that right. And in that process, then script get a bit of alteration as well. Funnier lines put in, or some of the spontaneity that happens when people are in a room. And then that would get timed to the storyboard, so we'd have the whole thing mapped out. And at that point is where we really have to do the hard work of going, can this be better? What's working, what isn't working, and really refine that storyboard process with the timing of the thing. Because once that's locked, we don't really want to go back because that becomes expensive. So each scene will then be, each shot is taken out and then that would be given to each scene would be an animated scene separately. That probably made no sense the way I said it.
No, it does.
Okay, good. And then alongside that, any character design that's not been done would be done. From the storyboard, we'd work out all the backgrounds. So if there were, we haven't got that particular background, we'd get that drawn. So it'd be drawing the backgrounds, making sure the characters are ready, and then all that goes into animated scenes. And so you'd have our team doing the animation of scene by scene, and then we'd put that back together again with all the backgrounds and make sure it's all any special effects like lighting or explosions or any of that kind of stuff is done. Then at this point, although we've started conversations at the beginning, we're talking with music guys who will be putting soundtrack to the thing. And then once that's all together, we'll get all the sound mixed nice and good. And then add extra sound effects like explosions and taps of feet and all of that. And then do the kind of edit, making sure there's that it's all just perfectly timed. And so that's the process.
And what's the significance of drawing it? You mentioned that like, we may tweak the background and then we'll draw it. Is that drawing just to like help you visualize it, or does it serve a technical purpose?
So with the storyboard, we draw everything out because we want it to be, we don't want to leave anything to chance. And so every shot, we can see with like scrolls whether it's working or not. And you can do that very quickly. And you want eventually that those to look good panels that you can just read the story as a kind of black and white sketchy thing. And then any backgrounds and things you draw are, you don't have to draw any extra backgrounds because you're not, that we've already worked out. The shot is from that angle. There's a bookshelf there, there's a table there, there's a window there. And so all those things, all the composition's been worked out. So then someone pops their head through a window, any of those things are planned out in advance. So we're not drawing a window later on that we didn't know we had to draw. I mean, sometimes you do, of course, but yeah.
It just kind of helps everybody visualize everything to where maybe if you guys are planning a scene and you visualize it a certain way, you visualize him, the cow standing in the corner with the dresser, and then, you know, y'all all agree on it. And then later you found out that, oh, everybody else visualized something else. So does it, that drawing just kind of helps keep everyone on consensus and
yes,
like, it's like a path.
Yeah. It's basically your compass, and you want, once that's agreed on, it's kind of a fixed thing without a lot of hassle, because everyone's then clear exactly what it is. Because ambiguity is a real pain. If you've got one person thinks the cow sat in the corner and the other thinks he's stood up leaning against a post.
Is it safe to say that this storyboard, it becomes absolutely huge at the end of a project?
Yes, although you'll see in like Pixar or Disney or these guys, they'll pin them to these walls and they've got walls and walls of them. And we don't have that kind of luxury to have that space. I'm in a small flat in London and I do use some office space, but it's just a table. And so what we do it all digitally. So I have some specific storyboard software that I do everything in there. So it'd be pages and pages of stuff, but it's all within this shiny square.
Just like everything else is digital.
Yeah.
So, something that's always kind of fascinated me about the animated series, and I think we've all seen like how they used to do sound effects back in the day.
Mm.
And it's like people like banging pans together or like just jingling keys in a bag with rocks or something. Like, they were so creative. Like, how do you do sound effects for your series?
So a mixture of different. For this particular one, I want to involve the musicians because the musical feel a lot more than normal. But it's a mixture of using our library. So we've got a large library of sound effects. But we also would record some extra stuff as well. I guess similar to those guys, we might bring in a sound designer who's a specialist on that for particular things. But yeah, some of that old technique is still done where you're creating the sound. You can do also take a sound and manipulate it. So I know in Jurassic Park, the sounds of the dinosaurs were sounds of animals, but they were making them a lot deeper, kind of sound effect stuff. Or yeah, see, there is digital manipulation you can do now as well.
That is awesome, man. That is awesome. It kind of sucks that to hear that it's mostly digital. I was hoping that you would like bring out a bag of keys and rocks and be like, well, this is it.
We might. Definitely don't write that off as something we won't be doing. One of the things, actually, the musician we've got doing the soundtrack, a guy called Nachet, who's an amazing jazz drummer, but he's played with Alicia Keys and like loads of people. He's incredible. But his big thing is traditional African instruments. And I was at a gig recently and he just bought over this instrument, I think from Ghana. And he was kind of playing, it's like a little xylophone type thing, but it was just like quite small. And so to not involve him in the sound effects would seem like I'm missing a trick, because he's that's his thing and he's so good that yeah.
Dude, you've got to do some behind the scenes footage. We need
Definitely.
Yeah, we need that. We need that on YouTube or something.
Yeah, so we will do behind the scenes things. We're gonna, on the Kickstarter, we can have various tiers. So you get the film with special effects, and then the bumper one with all the behind the scenes things that we produce. So we'll all have that kind of stuff. Some stuff will probably go out for free just so then people can be like, oh, that's exciting. But yeah, and then there'll be stuff that is just for those that have supported.
So now with the series, are you trying to get a message across with the series? And if so, what is it?
Not get a message across. I'm very nervous of any TV or film that's trying to push a message because I feel it then becomes propagandistic and becomes a bit too much like goodies versus baddies. And I just don't think we need more of that in the world. But that said, there are, I mean, we're coming, me and my writer and others, we're coming from a worldview where it's good to unplug. It's good to connect with real people, get back into being in communities and being flesh and blood, not just being this kind of disembodied person just looking at a screen the whole time. And one of the kind of things that the musicians are doing is trying to train other people to play musical instruments. So if people start playing musical instruments and they start meeting people face to face and getting off their screens once in a while, then that would be a great outcome. But I don't want tech bad, kind of Luddites rejecting tech good, because I don't think that's how the world really is. I mean, the bad guy, he's not like a Bond villain. He really does want to make the world a better place. And actually, Pop World is better run than the Bohemian Quarter. So it's not just he is evil. It's
It's more subtle.
hopefully.
Yes. And by the way, I'm so glad you said that because I read your plot and I was like, this is awesome. But I was worried that you would shove a message down my throat. And just to be frank, if I'm watching anything on TV, any series, whether it be animated or not, and if in the first 20 minutes they're like, our mission is to stop people from cutting down the forest. By the way, great mission. That's nothing wrong with it. But I'm not here for that. Everything, like everybody is trying to get us, it feels like everyone's trying to get us to care about something in the world. Everybody, you turn on the TV, it's like, there's a war in Ukraine. Don't you feel bad? Oh, there's a war in Israel and Palestine. Don't you feel bad? Which side do you support? Look at the homeless people. Don't you want to donate to them? You go to the coffee shop, they're like, hey, donate $1 to save the goldfish. You go to the grocery store, they're like, hey, you can't use plastic bags because that's killing the turtles. And I'm like, oh my fucking God. And for me to, like, I want to come home. And I want one thing. I want to be entertained. That's it. Like, just make me smile, man, because I will be more loyal to the piece of content that just makes me smile. Doesn't make me feel shit for using plastic straws or for having a Twitter account or anything like that. I love that. And I think that maybe some stuff, do you think that some movies do have messages? Like, for example, I've heard people say that Star Wars has a hidden message.
Oh, there's, you cannot create anything that doesn't reflect your view on the world. That's not possible because they are extensions of the groups of people that create them. But Star Wars, at least the older ones, don't feel propagandistic. They are telling a story. But taking a film, I don't know if you've seen Don't Look Up. It's like, I kind of
Great
agree with
example,
it.
by the way. Great example. That one, and I'm sorry to cut you off. That one is the one where it's like it kind of was on the borderline for me. It was quite clear, but it was pretty entertaining.
It was entertaining, but I did feel like, okay, you've not given the other side. You just made one side look good, the other side look stupid. And it's quite good that they've implemented all of us into the stupid camp. But I would rather have seen a little bit stronger side, stronger match. I think it would have been better film for it. But I don't want anybody watching this to think that that means I want to destroy the environment and destroy the world and
No, you do not. No, absolutely not. But it just does. I think people are just turned off now by the messages being shoved down our throat, because it just seems like every single day we're just told to care about something that's not in our immediate life. And also, if you don't care about it, you should feel like shit. Whenever I'm just trying to like get my life together. That's it. I'm just trying to be a happy, healthy human. And I'm not that good at that yet.
Yeah. And that's a much healthier, humble position to be in, because I don't know, this idea that we can solve all the world's problems, it's a bit arrogant. It's like, let's just try and solve a few things and do them well. I mean, if drinking from a different type of straw is going to save a few turtles, then sure. But yeah, I definitely can't solve all these problems, and I can't commit to doing everything perfectly, because I can't. I'm just a human.
Some of it feels like a hustle. Like, it feels like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What's it called? Carbon offsetting. Is it carbon offsetting where big corporations, they totally destroy the environment, and then they plant a tree to say that they're good guys. Like, oh, come on. Yeah, I don't believe you. And then they're telling people off who maybe do one flight every few years, and it's their big holiday that they've saved years, been saving up for years to go on, and they're bad people. It's like, oh, because you're richer, you're a better person. Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, we could talk about this for days. Or the women on Instagram who have $100,000 of plastic surgery. They have professional hair and makeup artists. They have the best personal trainers. And they take these pictures of their big old juicy booties, and then they use filters, they touch them up, they straight up Photoshop them, and then they post it on Instagram with the caption, "Ladies should love themselves." It's like, you should love yourself regardless of how you look. It's like, hold up, man, this is a hustle.
It is. And yeah, it's so... I can't remember. I saw a thing taking the mickey out of all of that, and it had someone doing all these poses, and then as soon as the pose was over, they were looking miserable. And I feel like that's so much of what's going on there. It's people are just finding whatever way to hustle, because either because they need the money or because they're addicted to it.
Yeah, totally. Or Taylor Swift telling us to save the plant, save the turtles, while she's like taking 5-minute jet flights to her next door neighbor's house, or something like that. And man, it just sucks, because yeah, like, these people are our idols. You know, we would like corporations or governments or celebrities with lots of influence and reach to help us. But instead, it seems like they're using that to make themselves more money, just like everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, I don't want to be cynical. I don't want to just fall into the, oh, I'm really cynical of these people. But then they keep doing things that makes me cynical.
Do you think, I've thought about this. So do you think that people are, I don't have a great word for it. Do you think that people are becoming like more shitty, kind of like how we describe? Or do you think, due to the internet and technology, we just have more exposure to the shittiness that's always been there?
I think the internet is an amplifying tool in many ways. So it amplifies the best and worst of humanity. But I think what has happened is it's easier to monetize anger, and it's easier to monetize the worst aspects of human nature. And so that has risen to the top, I think. It didn't in the early days of the internet. I remember when I first started using the internet, it was so amazing. Yeah. If I didn't know the answer to some random weird thing that I wanted to know, I would go, well, let's find a university professor who's done a PhD on this thing. Send them an email, ask them the question. They'd email back and I'd get the answer. That was incredible. Now Now they you probably wouldn't get a look in because spam filters, and they wouldn't know who you are. And the internet has just become, and they would be worried probably that I'm someone that's trying to undermine them in some way. I don't know. It's all, it was fun at the beginning. It really was a fun time.
It was awesome. You were so right. And I remember too, the beginning of social media, the original MySpace, Facebook type thing, Friendster, whatever. It was really freaking cool.
It was.
It was like, I remember I would go and I would make my profile or whatever. And I would like try to take, of course you try to take a decent picture or whatever, but you would go on and you would see kind of like more like normal content is how I would describe it. You would see people, they would take a picture and it's like, oh, she's very pretty, but there's obviously a zit on her forehead, but that's okay. Or like your buddy, you know, you would just, there was, it wasn't so posy and performative, and it seemed like people were more real, and just like it was just a lot more tangible. But now it's just been, everything's been ratcheted up to 11.
Because it used to be, I remember Facebook when it first launched, you organized an event, a physical event in the real world. You just send it to your friends list, and it, you could do it like really short notice. And if someone was free that night, you'd meet up. And it actually facilitated more face-to-face interactions. And then they got rid of all that because they wanted people sad and alone in their room.
Do you think it's nefarious? Do you think it was like executive powerful people got in a room and it's like, hey, yeah, man, these people are congregating too much. They're joining together too much. They're becoming too powerful. Let's tweak the algorithm. Let's tweak how this works to where it'll like divide more people and we can kind of make more money.
I don't want to think that. And it feels so conspiratorial. But the evidence kind of leans that way.
Beautiful. So, okay. We had on tinfoil hats. So it does, if they're not intentionally dividing people, like, okay, here's the question. Could social media companies and internet companies make the same or more money without dividing people?
I think that is possible. I think humans are incredibly creative. Yeah. And I think if there were smart people that were working towards that brief, I think it's possible. Smarter people than me. One of the things I've noticed is Twitter has now doesn't let, well, it lets you do external links. But if you do an external link, they won't show your post to anyone. Pretty much, they'll show it to about three people. And if you don't have a link, they'll show it to a few more people, but not many. but they've obviously done that to keep you on the platform, which seems smart from a business perspective. But I do wonder, because it makes me use it less, because I like, one of the things I've liked about Twitter is interesting people sharing interesting articles, which I won't read then because I'm looking at short things, but I'll save it to the app Pocket. I don't know if you know Pocket. And I'll read these articles offline later on. And it was a great source for just expanding my knowledge and helping me learn about all sorts of interesting things. By deprioritizing external links, it's just made me use the platform less. I don't see as many ads. That's worse for their business. So that's been... But they've obviously done the calculation that it's better for those that do stay on the platform. I've seen alternative platforms try and launch, and most of them have not done very well. And I used to think, oh, it's impossible to launch anything new because of market share. But I now think that things are so fragmented, I don't think we can ever get back to that. That kind of one dominant thing. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. It seems like the commonality to a lot of these platforms is that they make you feel good right now, and yeah. later on you feel bad. I wonder if you could flip, not flip it, but hey, maybe the content isn't as clickbaity, isn't as vibrant, but maybe you say, hey, after this, I still, like, I feel good. I'm happy.
That's actually something specifically Elon Musk has said that he wants to achieve. And whether he's telling the truth or self-deluded or whether he really believes that, I don't know. I don't know the guy. But he certainly said that as an aspiration. Yeah, it's so hard.
Yeah,
human nature. It's got its flaws.
What also sucks too is that you say, all right, you know what? I'm going to own a flip phone. But now, like, some things are kind of dependent on smartphones. Like a lot of tickets to events. You have your medical information on there, your insurance cards and stuff like that. Your GPS apps and all of this. And so by each day that passes, it becomes harder to opt out of this, that whole world.
Yeah. It's near impossible.
Yeah.
And it creates a technological gap as well for those that don't have, and then they can't access services. It feels really, doesn't feel right. There's a guy who, so in the UK, when people drop below a certain level of poverty in there on the streets or whatever, we have what they call temporary accommodation, where you basically have people with a tiny little room with a bed and maybe a cooking facility of some description. And that's where, and they just pack people in who are really hit the bottom. And there was a guy who's an alcoholic and he couldn't walk home. And me and my wife were kind of carrying him to this temporary accommodation at the end of our road. And I gave him my phone number and he said, oh, I don't have a phone. And it's like someone's reached that level and they don't have a phone. They're so cut off from so many things. And he probably doesn't have a phone because he's probably, every time he gets one, he probably sells it to get alcohol and drinks. Yeah. But once you're at the bottom, once it's all so technological, and also elderly people, of course, who might not have the ability to learn all the new technology.
Yeah. Yeah. It is weird. And I feel really bad for the elderly people because tech has advanced so much, so fast, especially like you were saying with the AI and all of that stuff. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I know. I was going to say all the AI stuff, its ability to scam is just, I was saying to someone yesterday who there's enough of his voice online that you could easily create an AI to replicate his voice. If you phone masking his phone so you can phone someone from his phone number without him knowing, using his voice, and it will sound real, particularly on a phone line where it's not quite as good quality as other things. Oh, yeah. And that's, I mean, we trust people. If it's their voice and their phone number is coming from, why would you not trust it?
And you're totally right. They'll even do something. They'll go on TikTok. They'll find like a 15-year-old guy on there, right, who has 30 TikTok videos, right? And they'll do exactly what you said. They'll get his voice, and they can mimic it with AI with just a couple minutes of training data. And then they'll find out who his mom is, and they will call his mom. And it'll be his voice and say, mom, I've been kidnapped. Oh my gosh, you gotta help me right now. They're touching me. They're gonna take me and cut my head off. Please, mom, just all you have to do is send $1,000 in Bitcoin to this address, please. And what do you expect a mother to do in that situation?
They'll be like, I don't know how to use Bitcoin.
Been nice knowing you, son. See ya.
So a sensible mum will be like, whatever his name is, Jimmy, are you upstairs?
But like, wait, this can't be him.
Yeah, like I saw him 5 minutes ago. But yeah, it's in that panic situation, a mum, if they've got the means or they're trying to get the means, they so easily gonna get drawn in. Because it sounds just like their son. Particularly if they do it from his phone number, which is possible.
Exactly, man. That is
That's the
scary.
really scary thing, the combination.
Oh man, yeah, you could do anything, man. We went from like these phishing emails, and also too the other stuff that they're doing with like what disturbs me about the AI is if you take these companies and you say, okay, what's your business model? How do you make money? They essentially make money by replacing jobs, right? Hey, you don't need 10,000 customer support people. You just need $1,000 a month in AI agents, and bam, you just saved $10 million a year. And this is crazy. So that in combination with kind of the other scammy shit you can do, there's already tons of AI porn. In case we needed another type of porn out there, holy shit. There's all of this stuff. It's just
Do
kind
they
of
have multiple fingers? Do they have like 10 fingers on each hand?
No, that hey, that's the appeal. That's the appeal, John. That man, she wraps all 10 of them fingers around me. Oh boy, man, my girlfriend can't do that.
No, you're gonna get a generation that grow up. Oh, I dread to think.
I dread to think, man, because and that's the thing is that they're gonna grow up and then we're gonna be looking at them and be like, oh, that generation, they are terrible. It's like, well, look what the fuck they've been through. Like, yo, put smartphones, AI, social media back in the days where Jesus walked. You don't think Jesus would be on TikTok? Probably so. Do you?
I've got no idea, but certainly everyone around him would have been on TikTok.
They'd be like,
He,
hey, hanging out with Jesus, yeah.
yeah, I wonder. I wonder. Yeah, they probably would have been like that, and he probably wouldn't have had TikTok, but would have been all over TikTok.
Yes, that's a good point, man. Yeah, man, we're all products of our environment. Hopefully, the jazz cow can come and save us all. Do you want to let people know where they could find you and support your work?
Yeah, so it's jazzcow.co.uk, jazzcow.co.uk, and the Kickstarter isn't live yet. That goes live on May the 1st. But if you sign up, you can get notified when it launches. And also, if you look up my company, Quirky Motion, QUIRKYMOTION, at the various different social medias, you can find us and follow us on them. So it's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram is other ones. Facebook, yeah.
That's it, man. Support these damn creative people, man, and get off of fucking Netflix, you bastards. Thank you so much for coming on, John. You're awesome.
Thank you so much.